listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a heads up, on Friday we'll be doing brunch with Bernie and the rest of the show from Plainfield, Vermont. I'm going to be speaking at the Goddard College Alternative Media Conference on Saturday, featuring me as a keynote speaker. Ellen Ratner is going to be speaking there, and there's going to be a whole bunch of other great folks. For more information, go to Goddard, G-O-D-D-A-R-D.edu, if you're in the Vermont area. This is Plainfield's just outside of Montpelier. And also, today is Wednesday. Tomorrow is Thursday. Tomorrow would be the normal Your Take, My Take day. And although Sam will be doing the show, so the TV show, so I don't think we'll be doing Your Take, My Take. But in any case, you can record a question for us for TV, and you know we'll use it next week at and then you know on your smartphone, and then just send it to us at yourtakemytake@gmail.com. Quick heads up. Okay. A memo to the Bush administration, or at least the leftovers of the Bush administration, who keep appearing on Fox News, to put it the way, well, actually, Fox so-called news is heavily populated by leftovers in the Bush administration. I mean, former political hitman Karl Rove, former press secretary Dana Perino, former defense secretary Don Rumsfeld, these guys are all over the network. And they're all yelling about how terrible the Obama administration is. I have a really simple message for them in the inimitable words of Rush Limbaugh.
Shut up! Just shut up!
There you go. It's so much better to have Rush say it than me. Until Dana Perino will hold Bush accountable. You know, she was his press secretary at the time, remember? For his failed response to Katrina and the financial collapse and maybe lying to us about Iraq. Dana, you sound really pathetic when you claim that Obama takes no responsibility for the IRS.
Bullshit.
God, how irresponsible for President Obama to keep to have somebody that the Bush administration appointed like a...
It's a five-year
like
term.
Brennan.
It's a five-year term.
Right, so that's why it's preposterous. It doesn't matter who appointed him. It matters that it happened on their watch, and they're trying to sweep it under the rug. What?
Oh, yeah, it happened on their watch. Until Donald Rumsfeld holds Bush account for intelligence failures that let the attacks of 9/11 happen. And by the way, not just intelligence failures, but the CIA sending a guy down to Crawford, Texas in August of 2001 with a memo titled Al-Qaeda or Bin Laden Determined to Strike Inside the U.S. They sent this guy specially just to get the president's attention, and he says, okay, you've covered your ass, go on home. That's a verbatim quote. And sent the guy back. And then Bush said, you know, guess what? I'm going to go on the longest presidential vacation in the history of America. I'm not going back to Washington, D.C. until I decide to. And I don't know when that's going to be. And so he stayed in Crawford for another week and a half, 2 weeks. He was like down there 3 weeks. And then he decided, okay, the presidential vacation time was way expired. And no attacks had happened yet. And so he said, well, where can I go in the United States? Let's see. I'll go to Florida. My brother's the governor there. His brother locked down the state, you know, high security, all that kind of stuff. And George Bush waited there for what, you know, I think was the attack. He knew it was coming. I don't think that he knew the details of what was coming. I think he was, frankly, astounded and horrified by the magnitude of what came. But he knew an attack was coming. And he could have done something about that. And in fact, you know, had he sent out a directive back when the CIA went and told him what was coming, that the CIA should talk to the FBI, they had like three or four of these guys that they were actively surveilling. They could, 9/11 could have been stopped. So anyhow, until Rumsfeld, until he takes some level of accountability for the intelligence failures that let the attacks of 9/11 happen and the lies that were told to us about Iraqi WMD, Rumsfeld, you can't really be taken seriously when you complain that Obama should be held responsible for slow Benghazi intelligence. I mean, it wasn't even that slow. A few weeks, maybe. At least Obama was cautious. Bush should have tried being cautious instead of charging us into Afghanistan and Iraq without even having proper body armor, much less without having a declaration of war or any good legal justification. But here's what Rumsfeld was going off on.
It was a terrible tragedy, and people lost their lives, and the way it's been handled since then has has compounded the problem, because the first rule of something like that is to gather the facts and then inform the American people.
Tell them the truth.
Yeah.
Don't we deserve the truth? Don't we?
Indeed. Well, in our system, we have to. And there's no question, but the narrative that was put out after the fact, days after the fact, weeks after the fact,
was not true.
Was false.
Yeah, right. These are all, by the way, from yesterday on Fox News. Until Karl Rove holds himself and Bush responsible for politicizing the Department of Justice, firing U.S. attorneys who refused to participate in political prosecutions, and spending all their time looking for non-existent voter fraud cases, and for shamefully targeting Don Siegelman. Carl, you really shouldn't be complaining about the apparently political choices of the IRS. And don't whine about how that was years ago and we need to get over it. If you don't want to discuss your hypocrisy now, then, Carl, just point the American people to any letter, any speech, any video, any evidence whatsoever of your contemporaneous acceptance of fault for any of the above. But until you do, don't expect any of us to take you or Fox so-called news seriously in any way. Here's what Carl had to say last night.
We'd have every major liberal newspaper in America calling for an investigation, hinting at impeachment. It'd be leading the evening news. We'd have every group that had liberal or progressive tendencies demanding answers and marching on the White House, and leaders of Congress, Democrats in Congress, you know, demanding to have answers. I mean, it'd be a nightmare at the Bush White House had this been done on our watch.
Oh, it'd be a nightmare at the Bush White House. Was there some more to this? Okay, go for it.
The use of the tax system to go after political enemies, to go against your political opponents, is chilling to any American, no matter where you are on the political spectrum. It was bad when Richard Nixon did it. It was bad when Lyndon Johnson did it. It would be bad if some bureaucrat in Cincinnati did it.
Yeah. So, and of course, it didn't happen in the Bush White House, not at all. The rector of All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena, the Sunday before the 2004 election, George Regas, from the pulpit, from the dais, said, Jesus would say, Mr. President, your doctrine of preemptive war is a failed doctrine. What did the IRS do? They immediately threatened to pull the tax-exempt status of this church, this progressive church. Meanwhile, conservative churches across the country were passing out voter guides for, you know, with listing Republicans. We're organizing, you know, taking people to the poll. I mean, all kinds of stuff. And none of those conservative churches were ever investigated. There were two large conservative churches in Ohio that were so directly involved in John Kasich's gubernatorial campaign, they were flying him around on church planes. These are big enough churches to have their own planes. They were never investigated. The Living Word Christian Center, conservative church in Minnesota, whose pastor literally endorsed Michelle Bachmann from the pulpit. The IRS closed an audit immediately without any action. The IRS targeted the NAACP right after they condemned President Bush for refusing to come speak to them just before the election of November 2004. And this right-wing group called Public Interest Watch, that was funded almost entirely by ExxonMobil, was able to get the IRS to start an investigation of Greenpeace, a group critical of ExxonMobil. So, yeah, politicization of the IRS appears to have happened during the Bush years. If it is happening during the Obama years, that's a bad thing. But it certainly happened during the Bush years. Nobody looked into it. Adam Smith, or Schiff, I think his name is, Congressman, I'll give you the details after the break, actually. He was talking about this back in 2005, 2006. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And by the way, liberal groups actually are involved in social welfare, and conservative groups generally aren't. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, let me just lay this out really simply. First of all, no Tea Party groups, to the best of my knowledge, were inhibited from starting. I have started nonprofit corporations, two of them, a school and a community for abused kids. when you apply for tax-exempt status, the states grant that status immediately as soon as you incorporate in the state, because you always incorporate in a state. And you incorporate as a not-for-profit, and the state says, okay, cool, you're not for profit. Now apply to the IRS for 501c3 or 501c4 status, or any one of the 501c, the nonprofit varieties. You then apply to the IRS for status, and in our case, it took us almost a year to get, you know, the approval back. During that time, you're doing business. You're accepting donations. You're just telling people this is, you know, provisionally tax deductible to you if you make a donation to us. We're quite sure it probably will be, but there's a possibility it won't be, and we just have to inform you of that if the IRS turns down our application. But, you know, nobody got stopped, number one. Number two, I'm just think about this for a minute. You're working in Cincinnati in the office where they approve nonprofit applications. And the IRS tax code says very clearly that 501c status, C3, C4 status, 501 status, 501cc, this is the 501 parentheses C is the chapter of the tax code, right? Describes that sentence or paragraph of the tax code. That status is provisional, is you know, it requires you to be a social welfare organization. Now, in the actual law itself, you must be exclusively a social welfare organization. The way that the IRS cuts slack to people, they say you must be primarily. And so Karl Rove says, well, 49% of our stuff is going to politicking, 51% is going to social welfare, whatever that means. Just think about this for a minute. Your job is to weed out the social welfare people from the political hacks who are trying to use nonprofit as a front to shield donors. Liberal groups are typically all about feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, getting food and getting medicine and medications to those who don't have them, national health care, whatever it may be, improving medicine, improving education, empowering workers so people have a decent standard of living, saving Social Security and the rest of the social safety net. These, I would argue, are pretty indisputably all social welfare issues. So if you're the IRS person whose job it is to determine whether or not my organization, which is applying, is primarily involved in social welfare work, and I say, you know, I'm all about making sure that hungry people get food and that more kids can go to school, I would guess that you would say, okay, that's social welfare. Now, what if I come to you and I say, I've got this group, and our main mission in life is to cut taxes on billionaires and to deregulate, to reduce government regulation on corporations so that the Koch brothers' paper factories can spill more poison into the water and that their oil refineries can put more poison into the air. That's what we're all about. Smaller government, less regulation, and lower taxes on rich people. If your job as an IRS employee was to determine whether or not the goals of my organization comported with social welfare, what would you say? I'd say, I don't think so. I don't think that defending, you know, low taxes for billionaires and high levels of pollution constitute social welfare. So when 3,800 new Tea Party groups suddenly explode in my inbox, many of them funded by, you know, billionaires or just local people deluded by billionaires, I would say, you know, this progress group over here, this progressive group over here that's overtly all about feeding hungry people, I think they're doing social welfare work. We'll give them 501c3 status or C4 status. This Tea Party group here, they want to cut government regulations. In other words, they want to allow more pollution in our air. And they want to cut taxes on Mitt Romney and Paris Hilton. I don't see where that's social welfare. So we're going to at least look over their application a little more thoroughly to make sure that they're really all about social welfare. And I, to this day, can't figure out how a Tea Party person can say, and maybe one of you who is a Tea Party person can call and tell me, what part of social welfare are you all about? I always figured that social welfare and liberal were interchangeable terms. And that ignoring social welfare and being concerned more about taxes and regulations and, I suppose you could argue that being anti-abortion is social welfare, or being anti-birth control is social welfare, or, being pro-church is social welfare. But the fact of the matter is that, we decided sometime back, a few generations back, that there were some things that were so important to us that we all would pay. We would subsidize them. We would pay for the commons for them. We would pay for their police protection. We'd pay for their fire protection. We'd pay for the education of their children. We would pay for all that stuff. We would grant them tax-exempt status. We decided that hospitals, schools, churches, communities for abused children, things like that, those were so important to us as a society that we would collectively subsidize them. Do we really believe that a group that is committed to reducing taxes on billionaires is so important to us that we need to subsidize it with our tax dollars? Really?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
This is the real IRS scandal, that they're not enforcing the actual laws that stand. Karl Rove, social welfare, they shouldn't be in the same sentence. Did I say 878? That's 877. Yeah. 877-378-8669. For free speech is fun drive. Anyhow, welcome back. So that's my rant, and I'm standing by it. I'm telling you, there's this piece over at Salon that Alex Seitzwald wrote. It's called When the IRS Targeted Liberals, and it's all about what happened during the Bush administration. That's wrong. Targeting conservatives, if you're just targeting them because they're conservatives, that's wrong. All of us, the powers of the government are, the government literally does have the power to take away our money and take away our lives. We've decided to do that as a society. We have decided that we will imprison us when we break the rules, and we will tax us in order to pay for things that we think are important. And nobody wants to see those powers abused. Liberal, conservative, Democratic, Republican, nobody, arguably Richard Nixon wanted to see them abused. But I don't believe that George Bush made the order go after that church that gave the sermon against the war. I think the IRS was just reacting to a whole bunch of outrage from a bunch of right-wingers, probably fueled by right-wing hate radio, just pumping it up, and they got all kinds of calls, and so they said, okay, we got to look into this. I doubt even Karl Rove had anything to do with it. And, whether it's right-wing or left-wing, whatever, we don't want it abused. And the president was quite emphatic about that, and Eric Holder was this morning and this afternoon. Heads will roll. People will get fired if that's what was going on. If, on the other hand, your job is to determine which groups are doing social welfare work and which groups are doing hack political work, well, I just have to say, what I've heard, maybe Mike can enlighten us about the Tea Party. He's a Tea Party member. Mike, welcome in Ackworth, Georgia. Thanks for listening. Hey. So what part of social welfare does the Tea Party work on? Do you work on feeding people?
I mean, why do you have to feed somebody based on a social program? Social programs come in all mixes and all different types.
Right.
Some people call a social program whatever benefits the social people as a whole.
Whatever benefits society.
How can if the Tea Party organization believes in limited government.
Okay, hang on just a second. What does limited government? You mean let the Koch brothers dump more poison into our air from the refineries?
Oh, come on.
Well, I'm serious.
Are you going to repeat what your president says, or are you going to be realistic here?
No, I'm actually citing legislation that's proposed by Tea Party Republicans.
Well, you know why? Probably because the people like you, I mean, and really.
No, it's because the Koch brothers give them money.
Believe. No. What it means is that there's a cost for treating everything. Is there a cost treating to a level that's below detectable limits where that you have to get down that level? No, you don't have to get down to that level, but somebody at some level says, no, we need to get there, but it's going to cost $2 or $4 or $5 billion to get there, but we don't care. It's just like what's going on in the South with getting down to the limits that the EPA says we need to, but actually the EPA doesn't really have a reason to get down to those levels. They just say we need to get down to those levels.
That's not true. The law requires the EPA to have a reason.
No, the law, the EPA does studies on their own, and when they do these studies, they don't have any concrete information that says that this is what happens.
So you're a scientist, and you know that their scientists are no good.
Well, I've read the reviews, and I've read
the Tea Party literature. Stopping the EPA.
Okay.
Just for practical purposes, Mike, let's talk about something specific instead of generalities.
Right.
One regulation that the EPA is promoting that you think is so destructive to America that you would be justified in saying that you were working for the welfare of society by eliminating that regulation.
Let me finish what I was saying before.
Well, just name one regulation.
But it's the truth, though, okay? The regulation is simple, that the regulation getting down to levels that the EPA...
No, name one regulation. What? Are you talking about regulating arsenic? Are you talking about regulating carbon dioxide? Are you talking about soot?
I'm talking about the simple...
Mercury?
Simple Clean Water Act of 1970. That was a good act. But some of the times that we say that we're getting down to a level that we don't need to, and the cost is going to be beyond what we need to get down to, why does society...
So what specific regulation is doing that?
The regulation surrounding the waterways around Georgia, around Florida. I mean, everywhere around, we're being told that we need to get down to these levels. And
levels of what?
The levels of the monitoring levels. And so the levels that we need to get down to.
Levels of what? Are you talking about arsenic? Are you talking about E. coli bacteria?
I mean, there's no permit for arsenic. I mean, what I'm talking about.
There actually is. The 5 parts per million or parts per billion is the threshold nationwide for arsenic in the water.
You're talking about RCRA. You're not talking about the same as what I'm talking about. What I'm telling you is that some of the statutes that come down from EPA to the local or to the state government, there's no reason to get down to these levels. It has no
so. So can you name one of those, please? That is so harming your community in Ackworth, Georgia, that it's to the benefit of your society to do away with that regulation. Can you name one?
Okay.
Mike.
Well, I can, but see what you don't understand.
If you can, you would.
On the point is,
and that's why the Koch brothers have got you.
Treatment facility.
This is how these guys have turned you into a sucker, Mike. They're playing you for a fool, and you're not a fool. You're a smart guy, and you shouldn't be letting the Koch brothers be playing you for a fool. If there is a specific regulation, they would tell you what it was.
Let's get back to point on this, okay? Let's get back to point is that there's no reason. There's no good reason, scientific reason, to be able to have to lower these levels to where they need to, where the society has to pay for some person saying we need to get down to these levels.
Society doesn't have to pay for it. The Koch brothers have to pay for it.
The ratepayers pay for it. The people at the government pay for it. And how do you think the government pays for it? They tax the individuals that are within that county or city, right or wrong.
Well, no, the government is not producing the pollution, so the government doesn't pay for pollution. It, with like cap and trade, the program that eliminated acid rain, that George Herbert Walker Bush put into place that worked so well, it actually stopped acid rain. They said, okay, the sulfur dioxide that's coming out of the smokestacks of the Koch brothers' paper plants and the Koch brothers' oil factories, there's now going to be a cap on how much can be emitted nationwide. And companies that want, they can barter, they can buy and trade these emission capabilities. And over time, we're going to decline the threshold. And that cap and trade worked really, really well to stop sulfur dioxide. And we no longer have an acid rain crisis in this country like we did 30 years ago. And you know, George Herbert Walker Bush deserves credit for that.
And I'm glad that people like you exist, because people like you do help to see another point of view. But what I'm telling you is, every time another social program is implemented, a deeper program that's implemented from the federal level, it has a trickle-down effect to the lower level. We know this back in the George Bush days of No Child Left Behind. It nearly put all the schools out of business.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm an active and aggressive opponent of No Child Left Behind. I don't like No Child Left Behind. It never should have been passed. It should be repealed tomorrow. I'm with you.
Absolutely. But the reason, what I'm telling you is whenever liberals and progressives say, well, Republicans just want dirtier air. No, what Republicans or what Tea Party people want is gradual steps that are not going to bankrupt a local town or local government, or it bankrupts the people within that, because the government has no other opportunity but to tax more.
Right, but the government is us. You've got
the government runs the organization.
Congress is elected by you and me, and they're going to set standards for the levels of coliform bacteria in your water, or the levels of arsenic in your water, or the levels of mercury in your water, whatever. They're going to set standards that are based on what their taxpayers and their voters are telling them they want. People say, I want clean water, or they say, I don't want clean water. If you guys in Ackworth, Georgia don't want clean water, then send somebody to Washington, D.C. as a representative who's going to be opposed to having clean water.
And what's going to be said is, Republicans, we don't want clean water. We want it at a clean water at a desirable rate that everybody can afford, rather than getting down to a level where it costs $200 a gallon to treat, because some liberal says, well, if you don't do it for $200 a gallon, then it's dirty air, dirty water. No, it's dirty air, dirty water.
Right. In other words, this is like what FDR said yesterday. He said, you know, when he's talking about Republicans who said, you know, let us take care of Social Security. We'll do it better. We'll do it faster. And best of all, nobody will have to pay anything for it. We'll do it for free. Or words to that effect. Yeah, we don't have time to play that clip right now. But Mike, I respectfully disagree. I think that there is a cost. And either the cost is going to be more kids with neurological damage or more cancers or more people with lung cancer. And that's a real cost to society. Or it's going to be that the Koch brothers have to hire some people and create some jobs by installing some scrubbers. Or, you know, the water system has to be made, you know, more effective and more efficient. But I still haven't heard a specific regulation. I haven't heard how the Tea Party does social welfare. I still don't get it. 46 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Indeed, how is the Tea Party a social welfare organization? Can anybody out there tell me one way? 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, and the fast food workers' strike, which I believe started in New York City. It's spread across the country. It went to Chicago. It's been to a bunch of other cities. Now it's in Milwaukee, and Stephanie Sanders, who's an activist in Milwaukee with that fast food workers' strike, is on the line with us. Stephanie, welcome.
Thank you, Tom.
So tell me what's going on in Milwaukee.
Oh, it's a day of action. It's just everybody coming together for up under one roof, and we're just going to, you know, fast food restaurants and retail stores, and we're just basically trying to get the wages raised.
Yeah, you're pushing for 15.
Wages,
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead.
We're pushing for 15 in the union.
Yeah. Okay.
And
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, are there specific groups or specific stores or businesses that you're targeting? And
it's billions. It's like majority of Milwaukee.
Yeah, the majority of them are paying basically minimum wage.
It's just like it's so big to where, you know, we have to have police chaperone, you know, just to get through the streets of Milwaukee.
Wow.
It's a wonderful turnout. Wonderful.
A lot of people showing up.
Yes.
So where do people go if they want to participate with you? People who might be watching us or listening to us in Milwaukee, where do they go? Is there a website or is there a place in Milwaukee in particular that they should go or just drive around looking for you because you're moving around the city or what?
Yeah, we're moving around the city. Now we're about to go down to downtown Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna rally down there and drop banners.
Okay.
At the mall.
That's great. Is there a specific group, or are you just an ad hoc group? Are you just a put together group of local folks who just said, okay, you know, we're mad as hell, we're not gonna take it anymore, enough already?
Right, yeah.
That's it.
We all just came together and we just, you know, we're tired of getting burns and cuts and for low wages, you know, like it's just like with me, I work for a McDonald's company, and I mean, I get burns almost every day from the grease,
right.
And I just don't get paid enough to deal with everything that I go through. And you know, I feel I should get paid more for the time and effort that I put in.
Yeah, well, I think it's just reasonable, and the majority of the jobs that have been created over the last decade or so, to the extent that jobs have been created, have been in things like fast food. They've been in low-wage and minimum-wage jobs. And, you know, that's back during the Reagan presidency, you know, Reagan was talking about, we're going to, you know, make the country prosperous with Reaganomics. And we were all saying, you know, do you want fries with that? You know, in other words, you're going to create more of those kind of jobs. And that's what we've seen. We've seen, you know, our GDP, 34% of GDP used to be manufacturing. The manufacturing is now around 11%. Mostly now we're manufacturing hamburgers instead of, you know, precision tools, you know, good jobs that pay well. So you guys are saying $15 an hour. I'm assuming, by the way, that you did not apply to the IRS for tax exempt status and get a grant or any help from any the Koch brothers or any other billionaires.
No, not that I know of.
Okay.
No.
just talking about one of the topics of the day. That's all. It's this whole IRS thing. This is so cool that there's just a bunch of people in Milwaukee who said, that's it. We're going to do it. We're out in the streets.
You know what, Tom? Not only in Milwaukee, we have Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis, surrounding areas where it's just not Milwaukee. I mean, we've come together because we all went to Chicago for theirs and Detroit. And so, you know, I guess they felt that, you know, they had to, you know, repay us and say thank you by joining our movement.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's a marvelous thing what you're doing. And I'm assuming that you would suggest that people in other cities around the country do the same thing. If people wanted to show up and, you know, in solidarity with fast food workers, what should they do if they're in, you know, Paducah, Iowa or in New York City? I mean, wherever they may be.
Basically, go to your nearest union.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you know, wherever you feel that you know you'll be protected. You know,
mm-hmm.
go to them. You know, explain your situation, and I'm sure they have resources that will help with the fight.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And there's even WorkingAmerica.org is for people who have no access to a union. That's the AFL-CIO runs that. And so, there's a lot of great resources out there. Stephanie Sanders, a Milwaukee fast food worker on strike for $15 an hour from McDonald's. And Stephanie, I so respect what you're doing.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Yeah, and thanks so much for being with us.
I appreciate it.
Okay, have a good one, Stephanie. How much time do we have, Sean? Oh, about a minute and a half. Let's get a quick call here. Dave in Arcata, California, listening on AM 1480. Hey, Dave, what's up?
You're dealing very skillfully with the very topic for which I'm calling, because I'm hearing right now so much of this right wing all over the IRS who are taking a close look at the Green Party.
Hmm.
But these same folks that are triggering all that had no consent at all when the Green Party saw it as their purpose to try to privatize Social Security. This is not an organization that's interested in doing something on behalf of the have-nots. They are strictly there on behalf of the very, very rich upper 1% haves.
Yeah, here's the problem, though, Dave. Most members of the Tea Party don't realize that.
Well, I know that. And I'm hearing a lot of liberals that are saying, well, the IRS should never be like that, looking too closely at any one side. I'm still telling my main issue always is these right-wing, voting machines, electronic voting machines, we've got to do something about them. I believe yeah. they're taking our democracy.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Although, if I was at the IRS and in charge of deciding whether somebody was a social welfare group and you were applying for nonprofit status and you were a group that opposed voting machines, I'd probably say, no, that's not social welfare. That has to do with politics. Although, I think you could build a case, but I don't think anybody's, you know, funding giant anti-voting machine groups, unfortunately. I mean, they should be. Dave, thanks for the call. It's always great to hear from you. Thanks for listening there in, on AM 1480 in Arcata, California. We will be back in the top of the next hour with Josh Moore, the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Muldrow, Oklahoma. Boy, does he have a story to tell.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. In Oklahoma, there was a high school student who protested the fact that the Ten Commandments were hanging on the wall in every classroom. He said, you know, this is a state-paid-for school, and it's got church stuff in it. And the state and the church are supposed to be separate. And he was a local atheist, actually. And so apparently the church pulled out the Ten Commandments, and so Pastor Josh Moore, if I have this story right, is printing up a whole bunch of T-shirts for students to wear when they go to school, 1,000 T-shirts with the Ten Commandments on them, so that they can wear them to school today, Wednesday, I guess it is. And let's see if I've got this right. Josh Moore is the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Muldrow, Oklahoma. And the website is Muldrow, MULDROWFBC, as in First Baptist Church, .org. And Pastor Moore, welcome to the program.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Did I accurately characterize the situation?
Yes. The student did make a complaint. It was the school board's decision to take the plaques off the walls in the classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who are printing the T-shirts is actually a group of churches here in town, not one church. It's a ministerial alliance kind of spearheading that effort just to give our students an outlet to express themselves.
Yeah. Well, you know, I totally support this. Because you're not asking me as a taxpayer to subsidize the placing of religious documentation in the schools. You're asking the students themselves to walk in and carry it on their clothes, and Nike does the same thing. You know, would you please wear our logo on our T-shirt or on your shoes? And kids do that all the time, and they're walking around with Nike logos and Coke logos and all kinds of other companies' logos. Why not, the God's logo? Right?
Yeah,
I don't have a problem with that. Do you? But you said, or at least my understanding is, that this is actually this taking the Ten Commandments down. The quote that I have from you is, "This is Christianity under attack within our own country."
Yeah.
Is that an accurate quote? And why would you say such a thing?
That's actually not an accurate quote.
Okay.
The one who reported that was his statement. I simply said okay, and then carried my line of thought, and I guess he tacked on his statement onto my comment following that.
I see. So are you in agreement with me that the state should be the state, the church should be the church, and if the state is going to pay for our public schools, we shouldn't have the Quran on their walls, we shouldn't have the Bhagavad Gita on the walls, we shouldn't have the sayings of Buddha on the walls, and we shouldn't have the Ten Commandments on the walls?
Well, I would say that's fair. I don't know if I agree with it, but it is fair.
You would prefer to have the Ten Commandments on the walls?
Sure. Lots of different reasons, but I believe that primarily the first four commandments obviously deal with the vertical relationship between man and God, but especially the last six commandments deal with the horizontal relationship between man and man.
Yeah. And those are those last six are the ones that are pretty much already widely enshrined in law. Don't steal, don't kill, don't well, you know, the first four are more like, you know, I am the Lord thy God, you know, okay, so you're going to get punished if you pray to anybody other than this particular God, and thou shalt make no graven images. I have had a dear friend, he's deceased now, who believed that that meant no pictures of living things, and he would have no pictures of living things in his home. I know that many in Islam actually interpret that commandment that way, because they share the Old Testament with Christians and Jews. And, you know, these kinds of things, but do we really, I mean, this is, first, A, as Thomas Jefferson pointed out so eloquently back, you know, at the founding of our country, 200 years before Christianity took over England in the year 600, in the year 400, England already had common law, and the common law basically encompassed those latter six commandments. You know, you can't kill people, you can't steal things. I don't know if adultery was a crime or not, but could it be that, you know, basically the, you know, these laws, we don't need a religion to tell us that these things are wrong.
Right. And basically, you know, that's the point we're trying to get across here, at least the pastors in town to our congregations, is that, you know, the law is fulfilled in Jesus Christ ultimately. And you know, we know it as the golden rule in our society.
Right, which is not even part of the Ten Commandments, by the way. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Exactly. It's what Jesus is actually saying is that all the law and the prophets, including the Ten Commandments, are fulfilled in loving God with everything you have and then loving your neighbor as yourself. There's no higher law than that.
That's right. And he also, you know, in Matthew 25, I mean, he talked about how, you know, when he talked about in the end days, he's going to be separating the sheep from the goats. In other words, those who go to hell to versus those who go to heaven. Are there with the sheep going to heaven, the goats going to hell. But in any case, and he says, and I'll say to those who you know, fed me when I was hungry and gave me water when I was thirsty and clothed me when I was naked. I guess the modern day equivalent of that would be housed me when I was homeless and healed me when I was sick and visited me when I was in prison. I'll say to them, come with me to heaven. Right. And then to the rest of them, I'm going to say, you know, off to hell with you. And the disciples were really freaked out because they had never seen him hungry and they'd never seen him thirsty and they'd never seen him, you know, naked or in jail. And so they said, how are we getting to heaven? And he said, as you've done to the least of these, my brethren. And what blows my mind is people who purport to be Christians are out there pushing for, well, like right now, the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats, just proposed cutting food stamps in the United States. And you got to be pretty damn poor to be getting food stamps. And it's not a lot of money to begin with. In fact, it's not even money. It's a card that you can use only to buy food. And they propose cutting food stamps by $4 billion. The House Republicans want to cut it by $21 billion. This is kids and older people who don't have enough to eat. Literally, it seems so counter-Christian. I don't know why the Christian churches in America, instead of getting upset about the Ten Commandments being on or not on the walls of a school, are not enraged by this or, you know, righteously enraged the way Jesus was when he threw the money changers out of the temple.
Right, and that's the other thing, you know, there's bigger issues at stake here than Ten Commandments coming off the wall or staying on a wall, you know. I mean, there's a bigger story here with humanity, with life, with society. You know, there's bigger things out there that we could, you know, be passionate about.
Yeah.
That actually make a difference, so to speak. In lives.
Well, not just so to speak, literally. I mean, quite clearly, if somebody doesn't have enough money to buy food, they're going to be hungry. Children right. are going to be malnourished. It's going to stunt their growth and their intellectual as well as their physical growth. I mean, there's just all kinds of terrible consequences
right. and
of
I don't
poverty.
Necessarily think it's an either-or thing. I think it's all encompassed as to how we react. You know, mm-hmm. the Ten Commandments being taken down. I mean, it's you know, these things speak to people, and obviously it's an opportunity for us to then love on people in the midst of all this.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I'm glad to have had this conversation. I'm assuming that you would describe yourself probably as a conservative.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
label on it, sure. Yeah.
And I would describe myself as a liberal, and I think it's a good thing that we can agree that it's important that people be fed, that society be, have that as one of its values, and housed and clothed. Not that, I'm calling for communism or anything, which is
right.
The way Jesus and his disciples lived, actually. But I'm not calling for that, but the shared purse, but that we look at these larger issues. Pastor Josh Moore, the pastor of the First Baptist Church in Muldrow, Oklahoma. Muldrow, FBC, like firstbaptistchurch.org is his website. Thanks for a very civil conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. We will be back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 16 minutes past the hour. Maybe there are areas of agreement, I think. Maybe.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
No, there's no maybe about it. But why would anybody want the Ten Commandments on a school wall? I don't get that. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And, my apologies to Billy. Because our program is carried on both for-profit stations and not-for-profit stations, both on by Dow Global on regular radio stations around the country, and by Pacifica Radio and not-profit stations, and then also by Free Speech TV as television on Dish Network and DirecTV and, cable systems all around the country. We have hard breaks, what are called hard breaks. A lot of talk shows have what are called soft breaks, where basically the host says, okay, we're going to go to a break now, and then, the music starts or whatever. But all four of the breaks that we do every hour are hard breaks, because we have each, our different stations have different requirements, and so we just have to have a clock and say, here, this is when we're going to go to break. And so occasionally I end up having to, I get stepped on, or one of my callers does. And so anyway. By the way, Saturday in Plainfield, Vermont at Goddard College, goddard.edu is the website, I will be the keynote speaker at the Alternative Media Conference. And the day before on Saturday, we'll be doing our show live from there, this show. And Dr. Mike is going to be in tomorrow filling in for me as Louise and I are traveling up to Vermont. So it should be an interesting weekend. Noah in Madison, Wisconsin, watching on Free Speech TV on the Direct TV satellite system. It says that you disagree with me. What's this? What's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
Actually, I watch it on Roku now, not on Direct TV anymore.
Okay, cool.
I have a disagreement about your statement that our government is us.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that increasingly, since Citizens United, and even before that, it's been we the corporations.
Yeah.
We the big donors.
Yeah.
I actually read a study. I forget where it was, either Alternet or Truthout, about a month or two ago, that said if you're something like in the bottom 30% of wealth, politicians will do it. Pretty much the exact opposite of what's in your interest.
Tragically, I have to agree with you. I think we are not served well by our political process right now. And this is what I keep saying. We're no longer a democratic republic, a constitutionally limited democratic republic. We are a constitutional monarchy. And the monarchs are nine people who sit about three blocks from where I'm sitting right now in the Supreme Court. And they hand down the law or destroy the law as they choose, as is their whim, and they change depending on whether they are Republicans or Democrats and appointed by Republican or Democratic presidents. And they are the most powerful branch of government. And that was not the intent of the founders, and that's not what the Constitution says, and certainly not what the founders had in mind. I mean, you can find that out just by reading the Federalist Papers. And so you're right. When I said to the fellow earlier in the hour or the previous hour, shouldn't the government be regulating things? That's us, and we'll step in. There is a big problem with very wealthy people and very powerful corporations being in between us and our government and corrupting our government. And that's why it's so important for us to take that government back. And I think the best way to do that is to amend the Constitution to say that what the Supreme Court said, this law that they literally invented out of nothing, that no legislature in any state or at the federal level has ever voted on, that corporations are people or that money is not property but instead is speech. Those two bizarre ideas, they are exclusively the province of the Supreme Court. Starting in the mid-19th century, right up to the today, it's been getting stronger and stronger and stronger, this doctrine, the Supreme Court doctrine, and it is the single most corrosive thing in our body politic. It is the cancer in our body politic, and the way to take that out is with a constitutional amendment, which is why I tell everybody to go to movetoamend.org and sign up and start a local group and get active, and because this I think is just the most important thing. So Noah, thank you for your call. I get it. Peter in Rockland, California. Hey Peter, what's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Tom, so good to talk to you. First-time caller, but been listening for quite some time.
Thank you.
Question, why are we approaching our question of church and state in such a manner? You can't learn about the church from the state. You can't learn about the state from the church. Where better if not in school?
Yeah.
That would be the most logical place to learn about every other religion. I didn't really touch on comparative religions until my first or second year in college.
That's right.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think that comparative religion is something that absolutely should be taught, probably at the junior high school or high school level. But absolutely, people should graduate from high school at the very least understanding the basic tenets of people who have religions different from theirs, so that they are less vulnerable to demagogues and Nazis and whack jobs who might either bring them into a cult or try to indoctrinate them into hating somebody else. And,
correct.
You know,
I'm aware that, and maybe you are too, that during Solomon's temple period, which lasted about 40 years, he had three shifts every day of praise, worship, and the third one was for receiving the dark sayings of the Lord. He had 14 bands of 12 musicians and singers working around the clock. So presumably, if your kids got off of, well, that was the school. That's where they went to school. Where else, if not the center of culture, and yet we seem to want to separate learning from religion and also from government. Paying for it.
Well, I don't want religion to be taught in our schools as this is what's true. I want it to be taught as this is what some people believe. Here's another thing that some people believe. Here's what Christianity teaches. Here's what Judaism teaches. Here's what Islam teaches. Here's what Buddhism teaches. Here's what the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster teaches. I mean, let's go through the world's major religions. And did I mention Buddhism? I think so. Hinduism is the one I missed. And just, you know, lay these things out. I think that people should get that comparative religion education. Peter, I'm with you. Thank you for the call. And, yeah, our schools can be. They should be. We should be teaching culture in our schools. We should be teaching music in our schools. We should be teaching poetry in our schools. We should be doing phys ed in our schools. There's all kinds of stuff that we're not doing that we should be doing. So let's get rid of No Child Left Behind and all the standardized testing nonsense. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
28 minutes past the hour. Is the Tea Party a social welfare organization? Really? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I did find that Jefferson quote about enormous inequality, the consequences of this enormous inequality producing so much misery to the bulk of mankind. Legislators cannot invent too many devices for subdividing property, only taking care to let their subdivisions go hand in hand with the natural affections of the human mind. He said another means of silently lessening the inequality of property is to exempt all from taxation below a certain point and to tax the higher portions of property in geometric progression as they rise. And there's more to this, the unequal division of property, which occasions the numberless instances of wretchedness, which I observed in this country. He was talking about Europe, is to be observed all over Europe. Anyway, we'll get into that in just a minute. Somebody called earlier and asked for that. I'll share with where this came from and all this. This is actually a letter from Jefferson to Madison in 1785. I'll give it away right now. Congressman Alan Grayson on the line with us. He's representing the 9th District of Florida. Congressman with guts.com. Is that still your website, sir?
Yes, and I'm always prepared to discuss wretchedness.
Okay, well, you know, Jefferson said that the solution to wretchedness was to tax the higher portions of property, in other words, the wealthy people, in geometric progression as they rise. So,
well,
not too bad.
I think there's an underlying truth to that. We have all sorts of government policies right now that increase inequality.
Yes.
One is the fact that ordinary people have to pay up to 35% of their income in federal income taxes, and Mitt Romney had to pay, what, 14?
Yeah, well, and that was 14 when that year he didn't count the money he gave to his church. So it probably would have been actually 10 or 11, which is what he typically paid.
Right. So if you have that system over time, of course, there's going to be an accumulation of wealth. The rich will get richer. The poor will get poorer.
Yeah.
Also, we have another illustration of this with Elizabeth Warren's bill. She points out that it's for student loans right now, which are issued by the government directly since the Obama administration changed that policy. For student loans, students are paying much, much more than Wall Street's paying for its borrowings from the government through the Federal Reserve.
Right.
She's saying, let's bring down one so that it's equal to the other. If you don't, then Wall Street gets richer and richer, and students get poorer and poorer.
Right. Why should students pay 3.4%, I think it is, and it's going to go up to 6.8% on July 1st if Congress does nothing? Why should students pay that when the banksters are paying less than 1%?
Yes. Yeah, so whether you're talking about tax breaks or whether you're talking about government programs or whether you're talking about no-bid contracts, over and over again, what you see is that the government has been helping the rich get richer and the poor get poorer instead of the opposite.
Now, and another piece of this is when Ronald Reagan came into office, about 34%, as I recall, of our GDP was the consequence of manufacturing. Maybe it wasn't that high. Maybe it was in the high 20s. But whatever it was substantial. It was more than a quarter of our GDP was from manufacturing. That is down to around 11% now, if I'm remembering my numbers correctly. And this is in large part because we have gone insane with regard to trade.
Well, yes, and we've been active in that area as well. Just this past week, the Obama administration invited comments on the Transatlantic Partnership, which is an effort to basically take NAFTA and extend it to Europe. And before we asked our own audience to go to our website and submit comments, there'd only been 113 comments submitted against this free trade giveaway, which, among other things, would allow corporations to sue national governments to prevent them from doing things like protecting their consumers.
Now, this was you're taking comments over at grayson.house.gov?
No, we're taking them at a website called tradetreachery.com.
Aha! Uh-huh. Perfect name.
And again, it's just another one of these so-called free trade deals that ends up hurting the public, ends up giving away our sovereignty for no particular reason.
Well, there is a particular reason, and that's that the big multinational corporations that don't pay taxes and suck money out of this company get to make more money.
Well, that's true. But I'm happy to report that with giving people barely 24 hours notice, we were able to get over 10,000 comments submitted at tradetreachery.com, which we then turned around and officially submitted to the Obama administration to give these people a piece of our mind for a change.
Yeah.
And in doing so, swamped the other comments, which were all submitted by lobbyists, generally speaking, by a ratio of 100 to 1.
That is great. You know, the thing that boggles my mind, I've been going on about the Tea Party today. You know, the whole IRS thing is in the news. We've been talking about that. But one of the things when I have Tea Partiers on to debate, which is fairly common, that we seem to agree on, except the official Tea Partiers. I mean, when I get on the ones who are paid by the Koch brothers or by Dick Armey, you know, they're all in favor of free trade. But when you get on the grassroots Tea Partiers, the people who are just kind of the, you know, they've just been sucked up in the movement, and they don't understand that it's really funded by billionaires. And you talk about free trade, they will be the first to say Ross Perot is right, Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush were wrong, and NAFTA, CAFTA, SHAFTA, all of them, they're screwing us.
Yes, and in particular, we're giving them the device to screw us further. For instance, the government wanted to limit the sale of candy-flavored cigarettes.
Right.
And under NAFTA, corporations who distribute these cigarettes sued in order to have this bill thrown out. We are essentially turning over our sovereignty to the people who care nothing except the bottom line, care nothing about our health, care nothing about our safety, and we're giving them a license. We're actually giving them means.
Are you talking about
us from protecting ourselves?
Are you talking about candy cigarettes, or are you talking about actual tobacco cigarettes that have a candy flavoring to them?
See, now you've gone past the limit of what I actually know.
Right.
My understanding is that that in order to prevent the sale in general or the appeal of cigarettes to younger people, the government said that you can't. Our government said you can't add flavoring of any kind, including candy flavored flavoring. Huh. This actually became an issue with part of the audience because they banned clove flavored cigarettes at the same time.
Oh, interesting.
So clove-flavored cigarettes actually are used by people from Southeast Asia.
Yes.
But I'm getting off the subject. The point is that we gave these multinational tobacco corporations, who care nothing about health, obviously.
Right, they're killing hundreds of thousands.
To sue in court to prevent the popular will from being carried out. They can sue against regulations. They can sue against laws. They can sue against anything that reflects our efforts to protect ourselves from them.
Right. And we have no recourse because we have turned our sovereignty. The United States, since NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, has not been a sovereign nation. Here's another thing that confuses me. We're talking with Congressman Alan Grayson, U.S. Congressman from the 9th District, grayson.house.gov, congressman with guts.com, and tradetreachery.com. And is that in my father's generation, in fact, when I was 12, 13 years old, my dad took me to a John Birch Society meeting. My dad was a big Republican. And not a big, I mean, he was big on the Republican Party. And they were all hysterical about we had surrendered sovereignty to the United Nations by signing agreements and treaties that said that we would not declare war on another country unless we were attacked first or it was authorized by the United Nations. And that is a surrender of sovereignty, but you could argue, and I would argue, that it's a surrender of sovereignty in exchange for something that's really good, which is world peace. But with trade policies, we're surrendering sovereignty, that is the right to make our own decisions, to transnational corporations whose only motive is profit. How does that benefit the United States?
Well, it doesn't, and it's particularly insidious because rather than having to prove their case in court before judges who are appointed for life, what happens instead is that they have to prove their case before trade tribunals, which are populated almost entirely by corporate lobbyists. So they've even stacked the deck in that regard.
So the judge and jury is a bunch of corporate lobbyists. Why would it be that the people who were, you know, my dad's era John Birch Society are today's, you know, right-wing Republicans and Tea Partiers, why would they, well, as I said, many of the grassroots Tea Partiers are with us on this, but some are not. Why would anybody in their right mind be in favor of free trade?
Well, at this point, it's become an alliance between companies that essentially embody the Koch brothers' philosophy, and they're useful idiots in the public.
Mm.
That's where we are at this point. I mean, the NAFTA did something that you wouldn't even think is possible. It managed to impoverish both American workers and Mexican workers.
Right.
And for whom? For the benefit of multinational corporations only.
Yeah, exclusively, and they're doing very, very well. Thank you very much. And their CEOs are doing very well, and they're paying lower taxes than the rest of us, and in some cases, no taxes at all.
And the sad thing is that these agreements get negotiated in secret. The Obama administration has consistently refused to release any drafts of these agreements except to corporate lobbyists.
Wow.
So Exxon knows what's in these agreements in their current drafts, and you and I don't. Well, actually, I do, but I can't talk about it because it's classified.
That's incredible. That's incredible. We have just a little less than a minute. We're talking with Congressman Alan Grayson, U.S. Congressman from Florida, grayson.house.gov, congressman with guts.com, tradetreachery.com. What would you suggest? What's your call for action to our audience for people who are concerned about this?
Well, right tomorrow we're having a hearing about another one of these trade agreement giveaways here in the House. And the record for that hearing is open to the public. So we're inviting people again to come to the website, give more comments about this. We're going to send out another email to our fan club. You can sign up for that at congressmanwithguts.com and invite people to put this in the record. And I expect the same result. You know, if we consistently show 100-1 against time after time after time, every time they open up the public record on this, they can't ignore that.
Yeah, you're right. And hopefully they won't. And so, because it really is the Congress, it's the we the people versus the corporate lobbyists. Congressman Alan Grayson, thanks so much for the great work you're doing and for being on our program today.
Thank you, too. Bye.
Good talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of your thoughts, my thoughts, and the news of the day right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And back to the IRS. How, again, is the Tea Party a social welfare organization? Who does it, who are the poor that it feeds? Okay, welcome back. It was 28 October, 1785. Thomas Jefferson to James Madison. 7 o'clock, and retiring to my fireside, I have determined to enter into conversation with you. This Fontainebleau is a village of about five, and he's talking, he's 1785. He was living in France at that time. And he says, the property of this country is absolutely concentrated in a very few hands, having revenues of from half a million guineas a year downwards. They employ the flower of the country as servants, some of them have as many as 200 domestics, not laboring. He goes on to, it would seem it must be because of the enormous wealth of the proprietors, which places them above attention to the increase of their revenues by permitting these lands to be labored. I am conscious that an equal division of property is impractical, but the consequences of this enormous inequality producing so much misery to the bulk of mankind. And then he goes on. He talks about, let's start taxing people. Interesting. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, where you can get a crystal heart made by women recovering from the effects of the war in South Sudan, something that Ellen herself organized. And it's over at goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Hey, Ellen, what's going on in the world today?
Okay, well, I was at the White House today during the press briefing. I have to say, I don't know who I thought was did a worse performance, the press secretary or the press. It was pretty bad. And the press secretary, I have to tell you, he started out by putting on the television, 6 pictures of him that had been running, of, you know, him in various poses during yesterday's press conference, said basically that the former press secretary, during the Clinton era had come out with a bag over his head. It's true. At the end of the press conference, he was asked by Mark Knoller, well, how do you feel about all of this? Do you feel under the gun? He said, and he started with, you know, I'm in the most privileged place, et cetera. A lot of groans from the press. He did say that there is going to be legislation, will be introduced, reintroduced with Senator Schumer. This is the Shield Bill, which passed out of committee last year, the Journalist Shield Bill. The AG has, as you know, called this an egregious classified leak, so that he's trying to cover his back on that holder. However, the White House is very much pushing this media shield law.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, now that they're looking into the AP is all freaked out and the rest of the corporate for-profit media is all freaked out. But what about when they were looking at WikiLeaks or when they were looking at, you know, the various whistleblowers or it seems to me like this when AT&T was working with the Bush administration and handing off, you know, and letting the NSA put a wire into the backside of their phone system, you know, and tap people's conversations and emails, and the Attorney General, Hayden, I think it was, or not the Attorney General, the head of the NSA was saying, oh, well, we're not violating the Fourth Amendment. It seems like this is something that has been created with this doctrine of executive privilege, and now it's coming back to bite them.
Yes, I think so. And it was interesting today, General Holder was up at the Capitol, and it was interesting because Daryl Issa gave him a once-over, and he lost it with Issa, basically saying that that Issa was, he didn't say out of line, but he pretty much said he was out of line. Frankly, I've never heard anybody testifying on that. I mean, although I have to say the hearing, and it was just supposed to be an oversight hearing, was, I thought, pretty partisan, with Democrats making excuses, really, for Holder's position, Republicans, you know, trying to completely destroy the guy. It didn't accomplish, if oversight was supposed to be the accomplishment, it certainly did not accomplish that.
Little light, lots of heat.
Exactly. on some other, lots of heat, very little light. I want to talk about something that you and I sort of, it happened yesterday. The National Transportation Safety Board recommended lowering the legal blood level for drivers from 0.08% to 0.05%. It's interesting because a lot of people have said, Tom, that this is going to hurt the restaurant industry. I'm curious where you come down on that. I know where I come down, but.
Well, 50,000 people a year die because of drunk drivers in the United States, roughly, is my recollection
right.
of the number.
Yeah,
and
it's actually, right, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And if we can reduce that by even one person, I'm all in favor of it. I don't think that anybody who's had, frankly, anything to drink, but, you know, depending on the person and depending on how long it's been, one drink.
The average male can get away with two drinks or two beers.
I beg your pardon?
The average male under this could get away in 1 hour period with almost two drinks. That's a lot of alcohol.
Yeah, if I've had two glasses of wine, I probably shouldn't be driving. I know my reflexes are slower than they would be normally.
Right.
I think even one glass. I mean, it's I'm in Europe. I think that I may be wrong, but I think the standards are even lower than this.
They are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are tighter than this.
Harry Reid today said he thinks Republicans have lost their mind. Tomorrow comes the vote on Obamacare. It's going to be the 37th time they are voting on that.
Now, they're not crazy. They're crazy like a fox. This is called pandering to the base.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
But
they're doing fundraising.
It's not going to change Obamacare.
No, of course not. But it's going to raise money for, you know, Michelle Bachmann.
It's interesting, Speaker Boehner today, he had his weekly press briefing. He said the IRS admitted to targeting conservatives, he said, my question is who's going to go to jail on this scandal. And also, it's interesting, I'm sure you've been hearing all about the military situation. Defense Secretary Hagel ordered all military sexual assault prevention and response personnel, as well as recruiters, to be reviewed and retrained following the two most recent arrests that have been had, one in Virginia and, of course, one down at Fort Hood.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, I have a question for you, Alan.
Yes.
501c3, 501c4, you're supposed to be a social welfare organization. Social welfare and liberal are essentially synonyms. So, you know, so liberal organizations are working to feed people and clothe people and house people. Tea Party organizations want to cut taxes on billionaires and cut government regulations. That doesn't seem like social welfare to me. You think I'm off?
No, I don't. But 501c4s are a little different than 501c3s.
Okay. All right. Ellen Ratner with the talk. You would know. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Brought to you by Goats for the Old Goat.com.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. First they came for the AP. Well, actually, first they came for WikiLeaks, you know? And the AP said nothing. And now they're coming for the AP, I mean, to badly paraphrase Pastor Niemöller. And now they're coming for the AP and they're squawking. I understand the squawk, but not for any. By the way, Saturday in Plainfield, Vermont, near Montpelier, where Louise and I lived for 5 years, we lived in Vermont for almost 10. But in Plainfield, Vermont, at Goddard College, I will be keynoting the Alternative Media Conference. And for more information on that, go to goddard.edu. And the website for the documentary I Am is iamthedoc.com. D-O-C, like in documentary. iamthedoc.com. The earlier website I'd given you is... will take you to some religious movie or something, but this is Tom Shadyac's movie I Am, which I'm in. What I wanted to share with you in this hour, or at least to kick it off, and then we'll pick up your calls on this and other topics of the day, is, first of all, somebody called yesterday, and in fact, Sue was asking me last night, and she sent me this request, an email, and I spent a good chunk of time going through my collection of Thomas Jefferson's works. I've got it in an electronic version now, and so I can search it, you know, searchable Word documents, looking for this, comment about wealth accumulated, people whose goal was profit corrupting the government, that I had read to you earlier last week. And Shano pointed out to me that was Alexander Hamilton, not Thomas Jefferson. So I'd mixed that up in my head. Probably when I read it to you, I correctly attributed it to Hamilton. Hopefully I did, because I was reading the actual quote, which I still don't have in front of me. But the quote that somebody called during the show in the last 2 hours and asked about was not that one. It was the one about, you know, if there's too much wealth or too much wealth inequality, we should raise taxes. And I want to share this whole thing with you because this is so brilliant. This is a letter. Remember, James Madison was Thomas Jefferson's protege. He was younger than Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson had kind of taken him under his arm, and he was almost like a son to Jefferson, although they were close and relatively close in age. But Madison was his protege. Madison was president after Jefferson. Madison was the Secretary of State in the Jefferson administration. They were neighbors in Virginia. Montpelier was Madison's farm estate. Jefferson's was Monticello. But here's this letter, 28 October 1785. Jefferson is in France. He's the U.S. envoy to France. We've won the war. We are operating under the Articles of Confederation. Jefferson is our ambassador to France for all practical purposes. And he writes this letter to his best friend in the world and his protege, James Madison. A very personal letter. 7 o'clock and retired to my fireside, I've determined to enter into conversation with you. In other words, I want to tell you something about this. This, Fontainebleau, is a village of about 5,000 inhabitants where the court is not here. In other words, the king doesn't have an office. And there's no government office. And 20,000 when the king is there, and occupying a valley through which runs a brook, and on each side of it a ridge of small mountains, most of which are naked rock. The king comes here in the fall, always to hunt. His court attends him, as do the foreign diplomatic corps. That's how the town swells from 5,000 to 20,000 when the king comes to hunt. But this is not indispensably required, and he says, But as this is not indispensably required and my finances do not admit the expense of a continued residence here, I propose to come occasionally to attend the king's levees, returning again to Paris, distant 40 miles. This being my first trip, I set out yesterday morning to take a view of the place. Now, Jefferson loved to walk. He says, for this purpose, I shaped my course toward the highest of the mountains in sight, to the top of which was about a league. As soon as I got clear of the town, I fell in with a poor woman walking at the same rate with myself and going the same course. Wishing to know the condition of the laboring poor, I entered into conversation with her, which I began by inquiries for the path which would lead me into the mountain. There was first he's asking her directions, like, you know, a way of striking up a conversation. And thence proceeding to inquiries into her vocation, condition, and circumstance. In other words, what kind of job does she do, and how does she live? She told me she was a day laborer at 8 sous, or 4d sterling the day. I don't have any idea how to translate that into modern money. And she had 2 children to maintain and to pay a rent of 30 livres for her house, which would consume the hire of 75 days. So presumably what he's saying is that she had to work 75 days to pay for her house for the year. So 3 months about a quarter of her income was rent. That often she could get no employment and, of course, was without bread. As we walked together nearly a mile and she had so far served me as a guide, I gave her on parting 24 sous. Now, I don't know how much money that is, but I don't think it's a lot. Because as a day laborer, this woman is earning 8 sous. Well, this is 3 days' income for her, but still, it's not enough to buy bread. She burst into tears of a gratitude with which I could perceive was unfeigned. No, she wasn't just making this up, because she was unable to utter a word. She had probably never before received so great an aid. This little ante-dressement with the solitude of my walk, and I'm sorry, I don't know what that word means. It's probably now an English word, but with the solitude of my walk led me into a train of reflections on the unequal division of property, which occasions the numberless instances of wretchedness which I had observed in this country, France, and is to be observed all over Europe. The property of this country is absolutely concentrated in a very few hands, having revenues of from half a million guineas a year downwards. These, he's talking about the rich people, who these few hands. These employ the flower of the country as servants, some of them having as many as 200 domestics, not laboring. They employ also a great number of manufacturers and tradesmen, and lastly, the class of laboring farmhands. But after all these comes the most numerous of all the classes, that is the poor who cannot find work. I asked myself, what could be the reason that so many should be permitted to beg who are willing to work in a country where there is a very considerable portion of uncultivated lands? These lands are kept idle mostly for the sake of game, in other words, so the king can go there and hunt. It should seem, then, that it must be because of the enormous wealth of the proprietors, which places them above attention to the increase of their revenues by permitting these lands to be labored. I'm conscious, Jefferson says, that an equal division of property is impractical, right? We can't just split it up and give it to everybody. But the consequences of this enormous inequality producing so much misery to the bulk of mankind, legislators cannot invent too many devices for subdividing the property, only taking care to let their subdivisions go hand in hand with the natural affections of the human mind. In other words, he's saying this property should be broken up and given to the people. He says the descent of property of every kind, therefore, to all the children, or to all the brothers and sisters, or other relations in equal degree, is a politic measure and a practicable one. Another means of silently lessening the inequality of property is to exempt all from taxation below a certain point, and to tax the higher portions of property in geometrical progressions as they rise. Whenever there is in any country uncultivated lands and unemployed poor, it is clear that the laws of property have been so far extended as to violate natural rights. The earth is given as a common stock for man to labor and live on. If for the encouragement of industry we allow it to be appropriated, we must take care that other employment must be furnished to those excluded from the appropriation. If we do not, the fundamental right to labor the earth returns to the unemployed. In other words, he's saying, give the unemployed the land.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Who would have known? Thomas Jefferson, Karl Marx. Give the unemployed the land that's not being used so they can labor it. They can do something with it. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I just find this amazing, this letter from Thomas Jefferson to James Madison, dated 28 October 1785. And he talks about how he's in this little town, Fontainebleau, and where the king has his hunting grounds. And he says, here's all this land that nobody is using. But after all these comes the most numerous of all the classes, that is the poor who cannot find work. He said, whenever there is in any country uncultivated lands and unemployed poor, it is clear that the laws of property have been so far extended as to violate natural right. In other words, if you've got uncultivated lands and unemployed poor, then whoever owns those uncultivated lands should not be owning them. They should be given to the unemployed poor. His next sentence, the earth is given as a common stock for man to labor and live on. And then he says, now, if we're going to, you know, take some of the land from the people and put it in the hands of the rich for the purposes of industry, for building a factory or something like that, no, that's fine, just so long as those people who are running that factory are actually employing people. His next sentence, the sentence before, the earth, here, let me start over again. Whenever there is in any country uncultivated lands and unemployed poor, it is clear that the laws of property have been so far extended as to violate natural right. The earth is given as a common stock for man to labor and live on. If, for the encouragement of industry, we allow it to be appropriated, we must take care that other employment be furnished to those excluded from the appropriation. In other words, if some people end up jobless because some guy built a factory or farmless, we must take care that other employment be furnished to those excluded from the appropriation. If we do not, the fundamental right to labor the earth returns to the unemployed. So either give them a job or give them land. His last sentence, the small landowners are the most precious part of a state. His most intimate thoughts, Thomas Jefferson to James Madison, 28 October 1785. Michael, listening on WWRL.com in Austell, Georgia. Hey, Michael, you wanted to disagree with me about the Tea Party?
Yeah, the Tea Party, for the specifically what the IRS has been doing. And the more information that comes out, the more egregious and outrageous the information is. Mm-hmm. I find it hard to believe that you're going to sit there and say that because of Citizens United, that the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, can go out and specifically target political organizations. It's not Tea Party organizations any longer. It's Jewish pro-Israel groups. It's pro-life groups. You're going to sit there and you're going to justify it by saying it's Citizens United that caused this.
No, I'm not. And I don't justify that. If you're talking about audits and things like that, I think it's reprehensible. And I think anybody who uses
power... It's against
power,
the law. It's illegal.
Yes, absolutely. I was just going to say, any employee of the IRS who uses the power of the law to punish people because of their political views should not only lose their job, they should go to jail. That's worse than cheating on your taxes.
Singling them out for more scrutiny is also illegal and against the IRS.
Well, maybe not, because what these people are petitioning for is not a right but a privilege.
Why is the Justice Department opening up a criminal investigation then?
Because there's a possibility that the crimes that we were discussing just a moment ago have been discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And
so,
we'll see. And if they were, then people will be prosecuted. Now, Nixon did not open a criminal investigation. Nixon did not request that the IRS deal with an even hand. Nixon did not denounce the actions of the IRS. He actually initiated them. He was doing all this in the background. What Nixon did is the exact opposite of what Obama has done. Now, what the Obama administration has done, if they are targeting people, you know, people within this administration, and those people need to be identified and they need to be punished. I'm with you on that. But here's the question. If to get the privilege of tax-exempt status, you have to demonstrate that you are a social welfare organization, as apparently Karl Rove did with GPS, and as apparently the president did. Let me make this multi-party, right? The president has one of these PACs, too, just like Karl Rove's. And or his campaign, his former campaign has one, and you know doing PR basically for him. So if these groups are going to say that they're principally social welfare, I don't get it. I don't get how engaging in political activity is social welfare unless that political activity is literally about social welfare. I mean, I could see a group that is you know, lobbying to or running ads to reduce poverty in the United States or to make sure that hungry people get food or that...
You know, I think educating people about their constitutional rights and the Constitution is social welfare. The Occupy Wall Street movement and George Soros, and there's a flip side to this, they were rubber stamped their approval. And I don't see where
the Occupy movement does not have, to the best of my knowledge,
there was no
corporate Occupy movement.
Given to Occupy Wall Street organizations, is what you're saying?
I don't know.
Obama's brother.
Most of the Occupy movements that I know about they're not so big or well funded that they have a corporation.
The IRS shouldn't apologize for what they did. Did you say that or did you not say the IRS has no business apologizing for going after and singling out for harassment now? Because it's come out that they've asked them for their Facebook posts,
right,
who they associate with, any of their family members, the information they ask for, it's harassment and it's illegal. And you,
if that's the case,
IRS,
Michael, they should be prosecuted.
Okay. Well, during
if that's the case, they should be prosecuted.
Apologize for that at all.
No, but the question that I was asking before, and I stand by this, is that social welfare and liberal are synonyms. They mean the same thing. And most liberal organizations are working for social welfare causes. The Tea Party is working to reduce taxes on billionaires and reduce regulations on the Koch brothers' factories. And I don't see how that's social welfare. I don't think that qualifies for 501c4 status.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And I think Thomas Jefferson would agree with me. We'll leave it at that. We'll pick up your calls right after this. 28 minutes past, yeah. It's the good, the bad, and the very great, hellily ugly, the good. Governor Bill Haslam, a Republican. Earlier this week, the Tennessee governor announced his veto of a controversial ag gag bill that would have stunted the ability, actually criminalized the ability, of animal rights activists to expose animal abuse to the public. Civil liberties groups have called the bill a gross violation of the First Amendment. In his veto statement, Haslam, a Republican, said that the bill was constitutionally suspect and makes it more difficult to prosecute animal cruelty cases. Good work, Governor. As big agribusinesses try to suppress our basic right to freedom of speech, it's encouraging to see any public official, especially Republican, take a stand for the Constitution. The bad. Dave Buhner, the radio pastor, went all Old Testament during a recent discussion on women's rights that was broadcast on Generations Radio. Take a listen.
The book of Numbers is very clear. A father who has a daughter, she's not free. She doesn't have the feminist independence that we hear so much about to make contracts, to buy drugs, to engage in activities without the father's consent.
Convincing argument, Dave. By the way, I'm pretty sure using that same document, the Old Testament, that supports punishing those who wear clothing of two different types of material, it's not the best way to support your arguments. And the very, very ugly Pat Buchanan. Last week, Jason Richwine was forced to resign from the Heritage Foundation after the Washington Post revealed that his graduate school thesis argued for restricting immigration policy according to racial IQ scores. Believe it or not, some people are actually supporting him. In his recent column for WorldNet Daily, paleoconservative Pat Buchanan defended Richwine against the attacks of the mainstream media and actually went so far as to endorse his arguments. He wrote, "Yet, Spain aside, not one Hispanic nation from which a plurality of our immigrants come was among the top 40 in reading, science, or math. But these folks are going to come here and make us number one again? Is there greater underclass behavior among Hispanics? The crime rate among Hispanics is about three times that of white Americans, while the Asian crime rate is about a third that of whites." End of quote. It looks like social Darwinism is alive and well in 21st century conservative politics, and that is just very, very ugly. It's amazing. Incredibly ugly. Jeff in Denver, Colorado, listening on iTunes. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Well, given that this Ten Commandments thing came up again, I always wonder when people push for the Ten Commandments being printed in public, given that the Gospels are supposedly the most important part of the Bible to the Christians, why don't they push for the Beatitudes?
Right, or Matthew 25.
Yeah, well, it may say something about their psychology. It's like you look at the Ten Commandments, they say, thou shalt not. They're negative and so forth. But Beatitudes are freeing. You know, blessed are the meek, the peacemakers, you know, the merciful.
Yes.
And then also when people say that, you know, our laws are based on the Ten Commandments, I just suggest people ask specifically which ones.
Yeah, exactly. And, I think the Beatitudes. I'm sorry. Well, I was going to say, I think the Beatitudes, Jeff, are particularly problematic for Christian preachers because the Beatitudes is Matthew basically 5-8, as I recall. It's the sermon that Jesus gave. And because at one point he says, do not pray in public. And because, you know, pray instead, go into your closet and close the door and pray in private. And if you pray in public, you've already gotten your reward. In other words, you got an ego trip out of it, and God's not listening, basically. Whereas if you pray in private, then you're having a conversation with your Creator. This is, you know, Jesus speaking. And that's problematic for preachers because they're all about praying in public.
Yeah. It's also problematic for a lot of our society because it's like the meek are those who are lost, who do not act in anger. Merciful peacemakers, it's for a warfaring society like we've got, it's a very problematic perspective to have.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you're right.
And then as far as, again, what laws are based on the Ten Commandments, can you name any nation that does not prohibit murder or stealing or things such as that?
Right. No, our laws are not based on the Ten Commandments. As Jefferson correctly pointed out, the Ten Commandments are based on human morality and law and, you know, a fair amount of religion, at least the first few.
Yes.
Yeah. So, in fact, he said when we were drafting the founding documents of the country, we did not need to look into dusty books to find, you know, in other words, the old Bibles and things. He said, we looked in our hearts and we found the laws of nature engraved there. Jeff, thank you very much. It's always great to hear from you. Delia? How do you say it in Bellevue, Nebraska?
Yeah.
Delia?
Yes.
So what's up?
I was just wondering, why isn't anybody investigating how much of the Benghazi ordeal was based more on the fact that Congress refused to approve the funds to the embassy that would have provided them with adequate security?
Right.
To me, that's where the real scandal is.
Well, I'll take it a step beyond that and say the real scandal in my mind is that the press, every time they report Benghazi and Daryl Issa, doesn't report that Daryl Issa voted against increased funding for security for the State Department on multiple occasions, as did virtually all the other Republicans. You know,
right.
That's a huge scandal, and every time Daryl Issa's name is mentioned, it should be mentioned that he voted against increasing funding for security for the State Department. And you're right. You're absolutely right, Delia. Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for pointing that out. Jerry in Amityville, New York, listening on WWRL in New York City. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, I'd like to comment on the whole IRS Tea Party controversy. And as far as I'm concerned, unlike the Justice Department seizing of the AP reporter's phone records, which, at least in my opinion, does raise serious First Amendment issues, but unlike that, I think the whole controversy surrounding the IRS and the Tea Party, to me, I think you're absolutely right when you suggest that what this whole issue and controversy really raises is the whole issue of whether or not groups that are, in my opinion, both political and which lobby Congress, like the NRA, or groups that are primarily political, like the so-called Tea Party Republicans, whether they should get 501c4 tax-exempt social welfare organization status with no requirement to report their donors. And after all, I mean, in the case of the NRA, this is a revelation most people don't know about. But on Monday, I saw on public TV, there was a Duke University law professor, Richard Schmalbach, and he said that he thinks the NRA even gets 501c4 tax-exempt status. And that's outrageous because obviously the NRA constantly lobbies Congress politically on behalf of the gun industry to make sure that the gun industry can do anything they want to boost their gun sales, including selling their guns to virtually anyone they want, or anyone from the Boston Bombers to the crazy Colorado movie theater shooter can have virtually any type of firearm ammunition they want, indirectly because the NRA blocks any meaningful gun legislation that would prevent these dangerous weapons from getting into their hands.
Yeah, you're right. Jerry, the NRA itself is not a 501c4. They have a 501c4. They have a 501c3. They have a foundation. There is a bunch of different corporate entities that operate as and with the National Rifle Association.
Okay, but the Tea Party did apply for the status, and I think it's perfectly appropriate to scrutinize them. I mean, let me give you an example. Suppose on the whole issue of tax-exempt status, suppose I set up the Church of Jerry and one of them to get tax-exempt status, and I claimed one of the main tenets of my religion was free sex. Don't you think I should be more carefully scrutinized and investigated than the local pastor or rabbi down the street?
I think so, yeah. And particularly if you claim your home as a rectory and therefore you don't have to pay property taxes on it, you know, which takes us to the the, you know, this is my argument in favor of eliminating tax-exempt status for churches altogether. But that's a whole nother discussion. But I don't think, frankly, that any of these organizations, whether they're conservative, Tea Party, liberal, progressive, I don't think any of these organizations, as much as I've been asserting that, you know, progressive organizations and social welfare generally go hand in hand, I don't think any of them, if they are endorsing candidates or if they are condemning candidates, I don't think, and in the public media, which includes the internet, I don't think any of them should have tax exempt status. I think that the IRS has been way too generous with this benefit.
You know, you're absolutely right. That's the way it used to be. I used to be a member of the Feingold Association that helps children and adults with attention deficit disorder through nutritional means primarily.
Yeah, I knew Ben Feingold.
Avoiding certain, they told me, back in the 1980s, they told me they were advised they cannot get involved in politics, they cannot get involved in lobbying on behalf of legislation, or they would lose their tax-exempt status. And so somewhere along the lines, the law was changed, and this is the result.
Well, the law was never changed. The way that the IRS applies the law has been changed. The IRS has guidelines for application of the law, and the law says you must be exclusively a social welfare organization. The law has the word exclusively in it, and the IRS regulations, which are not the law and were not written by Congress, the law was written by Congress. The IRS regulations say that the organization must be primarily a social welfare organization. So somewhere in the last 30 years, the IRS has changed their regulations. I don't know when. I would love to know. If any of our listeners or viewers do know, please call and let us know, or, you know, get through to us somehow. You drop a note on our blog on the homepage at TomHartman.com. Thank you, Julie.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So now Karl Rove can say, 49% of the millions, hundreds of millions of dollars we get, we're just going to spend openly and nakedly promoting candidates, and 51% will be social welfare. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. It's the Tom Hartman Program, and President Obama is going to speak to the press in about 10 minutes, just about the time we wrap up this program. And he's going to be speaking about the IRS, the scandal, whatever you want to call it, and Benghazi, and who knows what else. He's going to be talking about these things. Oh, it's just a statement on the IRS. Okay. Reportedly. All right. Thank you. Ron in Everett, Washington. Hey, Ron. Thanks for listening to KBCS. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Great topics today. I just want to point out yet another hypocrisy on the right. You know, my conservative friends, and please point this out to your guests and conservative listeners. My friends are always pointing out certain aspects of the Bible, and they're usually misquoting them at that. But if you read the book, there are more spoken words against greed than almost any other sin. Yet this seems to get a pass.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is just, it's frighteningly ridiculous how we even put God's name on our money.
Yeah.
It's such a joke.
Yeah. You're right. I don't know that you're right. Literally, I've read the Bible four times cover to cover, but I can't say that there's more assertions against greed than anything else, but I think that there's a lot of assertions to, you know, love God and follow God and all the, that kind of thing. But yeah, greed is a big deal. And Jesus, I mean, you know, the most famous parable where the rich fellow came to Jesus and said, "How do I get to heaven?" And he said, "Give away everything you have to the poor, and then come follow me." And the guy had to walk away with a sad look on his face because he was a rich guy and he wasn't willing to do that. Excellent point, Ron. Thank you for the call, and thanks for making it. Jim in Farmington, Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom? I'm an elected official, and I can tell you, here in Michigan, they are
they being who?
Losing their minds.
Who is they that you're talking about?
The governor and the legislature and the Supreme Court, because they're in their pockets.
The Republicans and the Tea Partiers in Michigan, in other words.
Right, and they're about to pass a law that will eliminate biodiversity as a forest management tool, which is, it's done by a logger. And it's going through the House right now to do the Obamacare by, increasing Medicaid, but with a 4-year lifetime limit for Medicaid. So if you've got a chronic disease, drop dead.
Well, drop dead within 4 years.
Right. Well, they don't, you know, they don't care. You should have a job, and if you're chronically ill. And so, I mean, they are going after the very structure of our society.
This is like the court of Louis the 15th, 16th, 14th, whatever it was.
Exactly. Louis the 14th. And, you know, they back each other up. This logger can put in a bill to eliminate any kind of, you know, interference with his logging operations, basically.
Right.
But not just his. The whole state.
Right.
They passed a law saying that the state can't buy any more property for preservation. They passed laws, all these environmental laws that are just stripping away everything that you can do to protect the environment. And, you know, they're opening up fracking into neighborhoods. They're doing all these things because they have power, and they just figure nobody's ever going to say anything, nobody's ever going to do anything because they have the money.
And they're going to do as much damage as they can, as quickly as they can, while they still are in office, until the people wake up and throw the bombs out.
Right, and then they can, even a minority, they can stop from being repaired.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're trying to do. And so when they say that these are just, you know, and several of your callers said, well, these are political groups that are out there. Well, if they're political groups, then they're non-profits. They're not non-profits.
Right. So you're saying that the Tea Party groups are fundamentally not social welfare organizations because they're not working for the welfare of society.
Right. Even
they're working for the rich.
We're calling them political groups. So if they are political groups, they shouldn't be using tax-free money. And my opponent did that last year, ran all through the campaign season, ran ads from a nonprofit he runs showing how great a job he does in his job, and he still lost. So
amazing.
You know, it doesn't always pay off, but they'll do it if they have a chance. They'll always break the rules.
Yeah, amazing. Jim, thank you for sharing that story with us. I appreciate the call, and it was Louis the 16th. Oh, and by the way, you're going to get a book here. I'm going to put you on hold. You're going to get a copy of the Tom Hartman Reader autographed by me. And Jim is on line two, Danielle. Robert in Northeast Maryland, you know when the IRS changed the wording on the law or the wording on their regulations?
Yeah, I believe I do, Tom. It was 1959. They took out the word precisely on their own and put in occasionally. So they did it on their own.
Oh, that's interesting. In the regulations.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you for that, Robert. So that would have been the last year of the Eisenhower administration. I wonder if Richard Nixon played a role in that. It's hard to know.
It's hard to tell. Something went there.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, Robert, thank you very much for that. Tom in Youngstown, Ohio. Hey, Tom, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the Direct TV satellite system. We have a minute till the end of the show. It's all yours.
Hi, Tom. I just got an email from amend. Judge Debbie O'Neill -Sonata.
Mm-hmm.
When on the Constitution vests in business entitles no special rights that the laws of this Commonwealth cannot extinguish in some, corporations cannot access constitutional privacy protections because they are not mentioned in its text.
Yeah, this is the judge who struck down, and actually it was Tom Lindsay with the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, CELDF.org, that got that community to pass that law that provoked that ruling.
Okay, so you've got this?
I'm familiar with it, yeah. We had Tom Lindsay on the program a week or so ago about it. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. Although she's a state judge, it's gonna have to go up the chain. Now it's gonna start going up the food chain, and it's gonna provide the Supreme Court with an opportunity to reconsider Citizens United. So we'll see where this goes. Tom, thanks for the call, and thanks for caring about these things. And you can learn more at movetoamend.org or celdef.org, celdf.org. Coming up over the next couple of days, I'm traveling to Vermont tomorrow. I will be doing the show live from Vermont on Friday. All the latest news and information from Wall Street to Main Street, everything you need to win the water cooler wars. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. It takes all of us. Tag, you're it. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.